you for taking a ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I am your host, Joseph Ward, and always ride with me is my good homie, Mr. Patrick Irv. Hey, remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information about PAX Inc., make sure you visit their website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, and you can actually support the organization through many channels, but one of the most prominent right now is on, bam, right in your face on the front page of the website, through Amazon Smile. Because we know a whole lot of people are buying through Amazon. Why? Because we're looking at the stock prices and everything, and Amazon is doing real good during this whole Rona outbreak. So while you ordering through Amazon, make sure you sign up with the Amazon Smile program, and that way every time you buy something, a portion of your proceeds will go to help organizations that are signed up. And guess what? PAX Inc. is an organization that signed up in the Amazon Smile program. So you can buy what you want and still support a black organization at the same time. Remember, go to PACTSINC.org to learn more about the organization. You go to Amazon, sign up through Amazon Smile, look for PAX Inc., and make sure you sign up so your proceeds can help the organization. Also, while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Patrick, all of our wonderful podcasters, Enigma September, Queen Candace, Queen Shelby, and all of our podcasts that we have coming out. We pretty much almost got a podcast coming out every day on the network. But great content, great podcasting from great people. www.freedomtrainradio.com is where you can find it out there. And remember, this is August. August is the Freedom Train Network's Mental Health Awareness Month. And we aim it specifically to the black community because we as black people understand the dire need for mental health awareness and mental health care, period, within our communities. So we want to make sure that we use our platform to be a part of the change, be a part of the new normal, the new now in mental health and black community, in the black community, pushing it forward to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves holistically, mind, body, and soul, better than we did in the past. Ain't that right, Pat?
Word.
Hey man, I need you to say that with some enthusiasm.
Word.
Okay. There you see. That's pizzazz. Did you do the jazz fingers when you said it like that?
I did not. But well, we can do it again though. Hold on a second.
Nah.
Word. There you go. I did it.
There you go. Jazz fingers. So we got a guest host today. We interviewed her before. And we talked about her homeschooling program. We talked about, what was it, the SEL, Social Emotional Learning, and that was a great conversation. But we want to bring her back to talk about a mental health topic that is new to me as far as the wording of it and how it's defined and identified. But some of the concepts aren't new. But Ms. Kristen, welcome back to the Freedom Train Podcast Series.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be back.
No problem. Remember, this is me, Castle, Sue Castle, so you're always welcome on the Freedom Train Podcast with us because we adore you for what you do in the community for the kids. You go above and beyond for the children in your community, and we definitely love you for that. So you always got a seat on this train.
Trick love the kids.
Yeah. So we're going to have a conversation about a topic called enmeshment. And I know some of y'all are like, enmeshment? What is that? I know it sounds funny. It ain't nothing you wrap around your feet if you got a sprained ankle or something like that. I know y'all might be leaning to something else.
It's funny. It's very funny, actually, because, like, I'm going to cut in here because what enmeshment is so what happens is, so the boy has a penis and the girl has a vagina.
Right.
I think that
go ahead, break it down.
So.
Yeah. It is August.
I think that was the entanglement. Right.
Entanglement, hey, but, you know, it's the same thing, I guess. Candy,
hey. Hey, that's funny, man. So I'm curious. Which one of you all want to start this conversation off about enmeshment? Because I'm not gonna act like I'm the most. I'm probably the one on this out of the three of us who knows the least about this, even though I have done some reading. So which one of y'all want to kind of kick this off and kind of get, you know, at least a baseline understanding of what enmeshment is?
Well, we were talking about the 12-step program to kicking crack habits. And
okay.
We weren't really, but that's what we're going to say we was talking about. And what was happening was there was some conversations being had about, you know, just the relationships that people have internally, relationships they have with their friends, with their family members, with various other things, and how those relationships impact them. And so, you know, I was talking to Miss Kristen about the 12-step program, and she spit out this word. And so, like, I'm a psychology dude. Like, you know, I read it, I study it, or whatever. And that's why even when we talked earlier, I had to say, in case I don't piss off none of my professors, when she mentioned it, that was the first time I can recall paying attention to it. Now, if I was in your class and we had a whole subject on it, I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
I apologize. That's not a reflection
Bad
of my ability
student.
To teach.
Bad student.
Yeah, it was a lot going on when I was in school. It's, you know, look, you planted the seed, right? Because if I hadn't went through your class, I might have not even paid attention when she said it, right?
So uh-huh.
Moving forward. So getting off the subject of bad teachers, we were moving on and we were talking about that and she mentioned it and I was like, huh, that's interesting. What that mean? And so
right.
She proceeded to tell me what it meant and I was like, oh, I know what that is. I just ain't never heard that word before. Again, no disrespect to the teachers, but hey, get better at your job. Why don't you level up your
full disrespect. Full disrespect.
No disrespect, but full disrespect intended. So anyway, so that's where we were. So not to steal the shine from SEL, because we interviewed somebody else who talked about SEL recently. I forget the man's name. Go ahead.
I don't know. You're going to make me laugh, so I ain't going to go down that road with you.
But no disrespect to him either, because that was a good show, real good show. But Miss Kristen was the first person we had on to talk to us about SEL, and she was serious about it. So anyways, also for those of you that are interested in anything having to do with homeschool or digital learning or anything like that with your kids nowadays, you should definitely check Miss Kristen out. We'll have a link to her website in the show notes below. But
yep.
So
Say the website.
Go ahead, Miss Kristen. So in addition to saying your website, why don't you tell them what you told me about enmeshment?
Okay. Well, my homeschool website is homeschoolingfootprints.com, and I also want to give a shout-out to PAX because they were very instrumental in helping me get my website set up. So if you need a website, this is the place to go. They do fantastic work. So I will put that out there. And as far as enmeshment is concerned, geez. So basically, it is parenting. It's helicopter parenting on steroids. That's really the best way to describe it. It's lack of boundaries between parent and child. And everybody has an example. Everyone knows someone who. Friend is busy trying to be their child's best friend, putting them in all their business when it comes to dating and what's going on with their father or their mother or whatever may have you, not letting the child really suffer any consequences. You know, you're always there to swoop in and save the day, not really allowing them to have any real growth. So that's enmeshment in a nutshell.
So, has aspects or is emotional attachment or some type of attachment on a level that has emotions in it, and you feel like this has to happen? Is that correct?
It's definitely on the scale of attachment the slide of attachment. With reactive attachment being, you know, you've got a parent who completely disengages, ignores all the wants and needs. The child is just there, literally fending for themselves, physically, emotionally, spiritually. Where on the other end of that spectrum, you've got enmeshed parents who, before the child even thinks of a need or a want, they're there to fix it, solve it, provide it. And it really leaves the child feeling insecure and unable to make decisions for themselves. It leaves the child feeling like they have to solve problems if their mom. Okay, so let me back up. So a great example is if you imagine a young teenage girl, 12, 13, her mom's dating, and her mom is having issues with her father. So the mom comes home, tells her all her business about her coworkers, all her business about the dad, all her business about the boyfriend, spends all the time trying to be friends with her and her friends, and doesn't really set clear boundaries. And so then when the mom is sad and depressed, the young lady feels like she has to fix it, and she's sad and depressed, and vice versa. There's really no clear line between mother and child. And it can be that way with mothers and sons as well. And examples that you see where it creates problems is, you know, when you have what society calls extreme mama's boys, that they can't seem to stand on their own two feet, that they need their mama to help them process and get through life and make all their decisions for them. Or you have what we call super daughters who feel like they have to come in and run in and, you know, make sure their mom is happy, make sure their mom's needs are met, make sure that their mom is okay, because the parent has done such a, I'm using the word great job loosely, with convincing that child, setting up the relationship so that there are no clear boundaries as to where I start and where you end.
That's interesting, because in the early part of your description, as you were describing, I was thinking about different things that I've seen in my life that I saw yesterday that could fall into this category of enmeshment. But I just want to make sure I got it right. So it could be on either ends of the spectrum where one end is the parent is not necessarily fully attached to the child, not necessarily involved with the child, but the child could have that feeling that I need to save my parent, I need to take care of my parent, or it could be where the parent is just totally attached to the child. Am I correct?
No. So I should have explained that better. Okay. So no, enmeshment is total control, total obsession, total relationship with the child. And I was thinking the opposite end of that then would be reactive attachment disorder, where the parent is completely disengaged. So it's a complete polar opposite of enmeshment.
Okay. That's interesting. The power saw.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that's interesting that a power and control dynamic is within that.
Right. And I was going to, and so because it all ends up relating to attachment issues, control issues are usually seen through this. So personality disorders, eating disorders, addiction, things like that usually manifest from these kinds of relationships on either end.
So we're looking at a situation where the needs of the, in this case, the, would you call it, I guess, I don't want to say emotionally abusive parent, but the lack of boundary setting causes the child to, at some point, begin to feel a compulsion to take care of a parent, even above taking care of themselves or any other relationships or situations that they have going on.
Right. So basically, as a child grows up, the child has trouble telling the difference between their emotions and another person's emotions. They feel like they always have to rescue everyone. They look to others to rescue from their own emotions. They're not able to self-regulate very well because they've always kind of had someone else doing it for them. And then you don't really know how to set personal boundaries and space.
Right.
And you lack self-confidence on how to function as a capable adult of knowing, you know, what you need, how to get it, you know, how to say no, all of those kind of things. So you see a lot of, like I said, some eating disorders, borderline personality, histrionic personality disorders, or OCD are really prevalent among the attachment scale, with enmeshment really being, enmeshed people look like super pleasers. That's really what they are. They're mm-hmm. super, super pleasers.
Wow. And so, I don't know, I guess, because I have this this article pulled up about enmeshment, and then I'm listening to you guys as well. And so people who are enmeshed, how would they react, or how would they move forward or operate if that one person is no longer around? Do they go into like a downward spiral? They go out of control? Because I don't know, when you said that, I just thought about Kanye West, and I could be wrong with it. He just popped up in my head with a relationship with his mother.
Yeah, so, you know, as anything with human nature, you see all sorts of reactions to grief. But grief can definitely set off some really strange behaviors. I've seen people that are enmeshed go from, you know, transferring one relationship to another, so that codependent mm-hmm. relationship, they're mm-hmm. always looking for that. So they may transfer their codependence or their enmeshed relationship with their mother to, say, a boyfriend or a husband or their own child. I've seen it completely go around where they're like, you know what, they shut everybody off. They shut everything and everyone off because it's just so painful. Borderline personalities really, I think, are a great example of enmeshment gone wrong, because you see that, you know, they're very clingy until you don't meet whatever need or you cross a boundary that you don't even know exists. And then all of a sudden, they flip the switch. Because there's no regulation of emotion, and they're kind of codependent on you to help sway their own emotional path. And without that, they really don't know how to act. But Kanye, yeah, his reaction to his mom I know he's been diagnosed as bipolar, but even with the bipolar disorder, his reaction is very, 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 I don't want to say over the top, but I would say enmeshment was probably an issue for him and his mother.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. That's very interesting. Because now y'all got me thinking about just people that I've seen in relationships and things that I've witnessed over the years, and I'm just now wondering, was enmeshment a part of that? This is interesting. Like, Pat, when you hear this, like, what thoughts are going through your mind? Are you, like, imagining stuff the same way I am, or you got a better understanding, so you not?
No, I think the first time we talked about it, I was, you know, and I went back and read through a bunch of stuff and looked at a bunch of stuff and thought about a bunch of stuff, and it was then. But at that point, it just became, like, because the more I looked around, the more I saw it, like, everywhere, which is kind of why it was. And I know that's one of those, like, you know, red Toyota things. You know, for mm-hmm. those of you that don't know, the red Toyota thing is, like, the example being somebody talks to you about a red Toyota, and then now all of a sudden, everywhere you go, you see red Toyotas. It's the red Toyota thing. But even now, after having a good bit of time to sit back and think on it and really just look around and fairly analyze things from an objective standpoint, it's still something that I see everywhere, which is one of those things where I was like, this is another one of those mental health problems that exists in the community that we don't really talk about, because we don't really talk about parenting. We don't really talk about setting boundaries. We don't really talk about healthy relationships, not even healthy relationships between men and women, much less, you know, healthy relationships between parent and child. Like, there's just so many different aspects of mental health that we don't talk about. And during this potential mental health, during this mental health awareness month that we're going through right now, we're also dealing with a situation where the pandemic's happening, schools are digital, and parents and children are being forced to spend more time with each other than they ever have before for a lot of people. So it's another one of those, it's one of those conversations that becomes even more prevalent for me. Like, let's really narrow down, like, let's stop just talking about healthy relationships between boyfriend and girlfriend, positive sexual relationships, and let's start talking about those other relationships, the platonic relationships. So that's kind of where my mind is now, is I'm listening, I'm still hearing, I still do think about all of the examples that I've seen. But another thing I think about is, like, why don't we have this conversation more often? And not so much a conversation where you're telling people how to parent their kids, because, you know, like, every kid is different. Every situation is going to be different. But a conversation where we're really talking about positive relationships from a holistic point of view, from a total point of view, if you will. Does that make sense? I hope it makes sense. I'm trying to make sense.
Yeah.
It does. It does. I think that now that they've given little parenting styles cuter terms rather than authoritarian or what was the other one? I can't even remember the old terms now. But anyway, now they have these little cute ones like helicopter parents. And it's really helicopter parenting on steroids. And you see a lot of it. It's like parents, for whatever reason, either they decide they have to be their child's best friend, or they have to be a total dictator with no input whatsoever from their child. There doesn't seem to be a reasonable, healthy in-between on a consistent basis. And it leads to issues with a sense of self and self-esteem.
What's helicopter parenting?
So helicopter parenting is hovering, basically, that you're always there.
Okay.
As soon as a child even thinks like they're going to fall, you're there to pick them up. If the school calls and there's a problem, you're down the school's butt before you even find out what's really going on. Your child can do no wrong, and you're there to solve, fix, and prevent problems before they can even happen. So your child never gets to learn from their mistakes.
Yeah, it's them parents is just literally always around.
Right. Okay. Now, I was thinking that, but I wanted to make sure that I wasn't giving it one of my special Joseph definitions. So, cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Because I get some of the crazy definitions, period. All right. So, now this thing that I'm reading, this is newhavenrtc.com. And it's saying that oftentimes and perhaps more frequently, enmeshment occurs as a result of family patterns being passed down through the generations.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
It's another reason to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean,
so
from
help
the
me understand that, please.
Well, I study developmental psychology. That's my background. And so it makes sense, though. Think about it. You parent the way your parents parented, which is the way your parents parented, so on and so forth, just passed down. So chances are if your grandmother got a switch, your mom got a switch, and you get switches.
Okay.
I mean, unless you purposely say, I'm breaking this generational curse, or I'm purposely parenting differently, then it happens. I mean, I know for myself, I hear stuff come out of my mouth that my mother said, that my grandmother said, that my great-grandmother said, you know, without even thinking about it. So it's that generational parenting style, if you will, that's ingrained in you, that unless you purposefully steps to change it, that's just how you do it.
Right. That's interesting.
That's one of, like I said, that's one of the reasons why I felt like it was something that needed to be talked about, is because it is it's a generational, it's one of those things that goes from generation to generation. You know, if you're raised in a unhealthy relationship with your parents, then chances are you're going to have an unhealthy relationship with your children, because you're going to do the same thing to them. And then not even really thinking about it, because to you, and that's the other dangerous or the difficult part about these cultural phenomena like enmeshment, is to you it looks normal. Like, it's not until somebody comes along and is like, that's not right, that you really
right.
see that and be like, you know what, that's not right. But even to that, it's a barrier. Right.
You're looking at it as, my mom loves me because my mom is always there. She always does for me. She always looks out for me. She always protects me. She always, you know, if I'm sad, she's sad. If she's sad, I'm sad. We ride or die for each other. And you're looking at other parents, you know, you're looking at the other end of the spectrum, like, dang, your parents don't even care about you. They're completely disengaged. So in your bubble, it looks perfect. It looks healthy. It looks normal. It looks like what you're trying to replicate. You know, and then you hear, and it gets reinforced in society when you've got, you know, these young girls thinking, oh, well, if he really loves me, he's going to stalk me. He's going to, you know, chase me down. He's going to, you know, rule me, the whole nine. It's the same thing. It's just boyfriend, girlfriend now instead of mother, daughter. There's same kind of codependent relationship.
And even in like the dynamic of the relationship between the mother and the daughter, when the mother is, you know, the one who's enmeshed. I know from our point of view growing up, because we saw that. We definitely saw that. And we just called it the parent being extra strict. Like, you have a real strict parent. And it's funny because it's just all coming together for me now. Because that's how we classified it. We didn't classify it as enmeshment. We didn't see it as something that could potentially be bad or something that could potentially lead to personality disorders. We did look at it as your parent loves you. Now, your parent might be a little off, but your parent loves you.
Well, the flip side of that, too, is the putting unnecessary responsibilities on a child, or responsibilities on a child that they shouldn't have to deal with. I know on the one hand, a lot of people think that that's beneficial. You know, you're teaching a kid about responsibility, or you're teaching kids about this or about that or whatever. But there's a certain level of maturity that needs to be achieved before somebody can be entrusted with a particular task. And if you put a particular task on a person before they're ready to handle that task, then you still run the risk of causing damage to that person emotionally. And so we're dealing with situations, and I'm thinking about a bunch of different things as I think about this term and the family issues that it causes, because it goes a lot deeper than I think a lot of people think about when they hear, you know, a parent just always being around. You know, like when I first started researching, one of the things that was real interesting that really made me think about it was, I was reading an article by a doctor such and such on it. I forget the name of it, and if I can find it out, it'll be in the show notes. But this doctor was basically saying that the concept of a super mom or a super daughter is born out of enmeshment relationships. A mother,
that perfect parent, that perfect daughter,
Right. This need to put everybody else, or not necessarily everybody else, but put the people that I'm enmeshed with in front of me. And typically those people are, you know, other elder people in my life. You know, so, you know, you're looking at moms, you're looking at grandmas, you're looking at people of that nature, maybe dads, maybe granddads. Now, what I thought was interesting was most of the stuff I was reading about was speaking specifically to the relationship between generations of women. So grandma to mom, mom to daughter, you know, that. So, and I thought that was real interesting, because we always talk about the generational issues prevalent in men. You know, he ain't got no daddy. That's why he fucked up. And all these other mm-hmm. things. But, like, that was the first time I actually really ever read an article that talked about generational problems in women based on the relationship that they have with their mom. And so that was another thing for me that was just really interesting because I love everything that allows me to paint a picture that says that, like, everybody's fucked up on both sides.
Right.
Yeah.
And this kind of does that for me.
So,
well,
so
and, with, go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I well, was just going to say.
You talk. You talk. Go ahead.
Okay. I was just going to say you have to look at the level of a guilt that is levied on the child as well. That's also why I said it's helicopter parenting on steroids, because it's not just I do this for you, you know, I love you, you're my pride and joy, your everything matters to me. It's the how can you not, I've done all this for you, how could you not repay me, how could you not,
right,
you know, be sad when I'm sad, how can you not, it's that kind of blurring of the lines that adds
right.
to it and takes it over the top.
Well, that's a very unhealthy attachment, because that's conditional love at its highest.
Yes.
Wow. So yes. So is this something that's mainly found in the mother daughter relationship more so than maybe the father son relationship with enmeshment?
You don't typically find it in father and son, but you do find it with mother and son and mother and daughter. Yeah, yeah. I hate to say it, but it is mostly mom. Mm.
Why do you think it is mostly moms? I mean, and I ask that because enmeshment is something that both men and women can experience, can go through. But why has it been seen mostly in women?
I think it's that old societal norm that the moms provide the emotional support and the dads provide the financial support and the physical support. You know, the dads are responsible for making sure you have a roof over your head, food on the table, and clothes on your back. And the mom is responsible for making the meals and kissing the boo-boos and helping you when you're sick and all the emotional support. And so I think that just gets transferred to the child because, again, it's like instead of going to your partner and saying, hey, honey, I've had a rough day, you know, I'm stressed out, my coworker did this, you know, I'm mad at this, whatever, you're going to your child and you're treating your child and you're putting your child in adult situations that they are not emotionally equipped for and have no business being in the middle of them.
Right. And that's the key right there. And this ain't just to moms, but this is to dads as well, even though I know we just said it. And even in a lot of my reading, I found that it was mostly with reference to women. Stop putting your kids in situations that they not equipped. Like, if it's a grown person situation and your kid ain't a grown person, don't do that. Don't intentionally do it. I understand if something just happened and, you know, they're in a spot. But don't intentionally put your kid in a grown person situation. Don't if you're one of them people that's going to go missing for days on end and you got kids at home and you like, well, you know, they got a sibling that's going to take care of them. Don't do that. That ain't what that's not their job. That's not what they're there for. They're not equipped for that.
Right.
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 Yeah, that's real though. Cause the thing is, I understand every parent wants to raise a competent, healthy, productive child. But even in this, you have to realize that the children still need their room to grow to be their own person, and it's not the parents' job to dictate every step of the child's life, because in doing that, like you said earlier, the child is not really going to learn how to be an individual, how to be on their own. They will be looking at the world and experiencing the world through an basically as an image of the parent, and not as an individual, because you have to make mistakes to grow. Sometimes you got to take a loss to learn how to win. And if the parent is always hovering over the child, and I want to make sure you do this right, because I want to make sure you do it right, because I love you and all these things, yeah. But a lot of times now that we're talking about it, and I'm thinking about a lot of the conversations that people would say to kind of reinforce their power of control. So it's like, okay, I'm going to tell you these things to justify what I'm doing, even though what I'm doing is unhealthy. But at the same time, they don't even really realize how unhealthy it is and how problematic it is. That's scary.
And they don't. They really don't. And it leaves that child feeling like they're responsible of taking care of the parent and their parent's needs. I mean, like, literally, I've heard Emesh people say, well, I have to say or do this, or I have to be or do that, because if I don't, then my parent or my mom will not be able to take care of A, B, C, D, E. And it's like, well, wait a minute, who's the parent? Or they, like, you know, they feel guilty if they spend time away. You know, like, okay, so you're supposed to be going on vacation with your immediate family, your husband, your, you know, your children, whatever. And then the mom says something like, oh, I wish I could go, you know, and now all of a sudden you're feeling bad and guilty because you're not taking your mom with you on vacation with your husband and your children. Or, you know, you feel guilty because you don't want to move far from home. If you can't move within a 30-minute radius of your family because, you know, they might need you, or you might miss a family function. Or if you do miss a family function, you know, there's hell to pay because you've missed something that you're supposed to be there for. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And even in the aspect that we're talking about, the mother including the child in her business. So like you say, she come home and instead of talking to her mate, she talks to the child. And basically you're putting this child in grown folks' business. But then when that mm-hmm. child may be but in grown folks' business anytime in the future, or is engaging in what you consider grown folk business, then the child is punished for that. Because you shouldn't be doing that stuff. You're supposed to stay in the child's place. But 95% of the time, you're putting this child in the grown folks' place because you're involving her or this child or whoever in any type of business or interaction that you have as an adult that, like you all said, the child isn't capable of handling. The child can only give you understanding from their point of view. So really, they're really just your yes man at that point, making you feel, because they give you the answers you want, even though that's not really what it is.
Right. And you're telling secrets, you know, like, well, your daddy did this, your daddy did that, you know, and it impacts relationship. And then when you make up with that, okay, so I'm telling you things my boyfriend did, and now you're mad at my boyfriend because I'm mad at my boyfriend, but then my boyfriend and I make up. But you weren't a part of that, so you're still mad, right? And then that creates issues and around boundaries, absolutely.
Yeah.
It really makes me, from that standpoint, because there are a couple of different angles that I think about this from. It might not be enmeshment in that sense, but it does make me think about the whole concept that a lot of people have that, you know, like a young child can be the man of the house because there's no other man there. You know, like.
No.
Right. Like the idea that. Oh, well, you know, he's 7 years old. Ain't no other man in the house, so he the man. No, he's 7 years old in the house. He's not the man of the house.
Right.
He's a 7 year old in the house.
Who's in the house. Right.
let's not do this. And then, you know, the kid grows up constantly hearing, I'm the man of the house. I got to do this. I'm the man of the house. I got to do that. And his concept of what it means to be a man is warped from that early age. Because he honestly feels like, well, I've been a man since I was 7 years old. No, you haven't. No, you haven't.
Right. I got to help my moms. Like, we hear dudes saying that all the time, and a lot of the things that they do is take the round. Well, I got to make sure I help my mom. Because I talk about it all the time on my sports podcast, when those kids are expected to save the family through their athletic ability, and like the mom is overbearing, overprotective, over everything, and just trying to make sure that this and this, because you have that immense relationship, but also with the end goal in mind of getting my child to the NFL so my child can take care of me, because he's supposed to take care of his mama, because that's what good boys do. Good boys grow up and they take care of their mothers. And it's like...
Right. Instead of the other way around. No, parents take care of the children. You're not taking... That's not your responsibility. There's a list that I wanted to go through really quickly just to make sure people understand examples, signs and symptoms. So they have a better understanding, I guess. So I'm just going to read through a couple of them. So one of the things that is a clear sign of enmeshment is the lack of emotional and physical boundaries. Not being able to think, you don't think about what's best for you or what you want. It's always about pleasing or taking care of others. Feeling responsible for other people's happiness and well-being. You're guilted or shamed if you want less contact, don't want to talk to your mother every week, or don't want to spend a holiday without your parents, or if you make a choice that's good for you, such as moving across country or for a great job or opportunity. Your parent, and this goes to what you just talked about, Joe, your parents' self-worth seems to hinge on your success or accomplishment. Your parents want to know everything about your life. Your parents' lives center around yours. Your parents don't encourage you to follow your dreams and may impose their ideas about what you should be doing. Family members overshare personal experiences and feelings in a way that creates unrealistic expectations, unhealthy dependence, confused roles. Often enmeshed parents treat their children as friends, rely on them for emotional support, and share inappropriate personal information. You feel like you have to meet your parents' expectations, perhaps giving up your own goals because they don't approve. You try to avoid conflicts and don't know how to say no. You don't have a strong sense of who you are, and you absorb other people's feelings. And you absorb other people's feelings, and you feel like you need to fix other people's problems.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to handle. Because just think about the amount of just things and pressure that you go through trying to keep your own life in order and put yourself on the right track and keep your own mental state together. But to do that, but also to feel like I have to take care of everybody else, you're going to wear yourself out mentally, physically, emotionally, psychologically, and you're going to end up having a nervous breakdown, a mental breakdown or something real soon.
Right. Because on the outside, it looks like the parent really is, it's about you, but really it's not. It's about their own needs, because the parent is prioritizing their needs above their child. And the child, the parent is lacking respect for their feelings, needs, or their individuality, which leads to role confusion. And the child feeling like they've got to be responsible for taking care of their parent, because innately the child realizes, wait a minute, emotionally my parent is not right.
Right.
So.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That goes into the added confusion, though, because even when the child does realize, all right, my parent is on one right now, they still struggle with the fact that, you know, this is still my parent. Like, this is, and, you know, we've had those shows where we talk about when your parents become human to you. I think we've had one. I don't know. We've done a lot of shows. I'm sure there's one in there somewhere. You know, where your parents become human to you, like the moment you realize your dad is not an all-powerful superhero. Or the moment you realize your mom is not, you know, the mother of the entire planet. You know, those are significant milestones in the mental development of a child. But even, you know, beyond that is coming to that realization about a parent, while also coming to the realization that the maneuvers that they're making might not actually be in my best interest. When there isn't any clear indication that's heavy. Like you guys are saying, that's heavy. That's a lot to put on a kid. You know, that's a lot to put on an adult that used to be a kid in that situation, but now is an adult realizing that they're in a compromised situation with somebody that raised them that they have the utmost respect for. It's a lot. And so I do think a lot of these people end up emotionally and mentally compromised for various reasons. I don't necessarily think that that's their fault, but I do think we're in a situation now where this relationship between parent and child, where the boundaries are established, where the social rules of the world are put in place, this relationship needs to be looked at and analyzed more thoroughly by, like, all of these, you know, relationship and scientific gurus and folks of that nature. I'm not talking about you bullshit-ass motherfuckers that be got a Facebook page and then read a couple of goddamn Jim Rohn books or some shit. I'm talking about real motherfucking gurus that's actually studied this shit and they know what they talk. I got to clarify, because you'll get a lot of these Derrick Jackson motherfuckers that'll pop up and be like, I know what's wrong with you and your mom. No, shut up.
You a dummy, and something wrong with you if you just listen to some random dude off of social media because they said a couple things that you always been wanting to hear. You're not serious about improving yourself. You're not serious about moving forward because you only looking for validation in that point. Let's just be real.
Right.
Well.
I mean, the bottom line, I'm hoping that people understand when it comes to relationships and enmeshment is that adult parents should not be using their children to make themselves feel valued and safe and to regulate their emotions, period. That is not your child's job, period. And it's not your job to have your child validate themselves through you either. So it goes both ways. And that's why you see all these kids who grow up with famous parents and they can't ever do or be anything because they're living vicariously. You know, well, my dad was such and such, you know, not to say that that relationship was a mesh because it's probably towards the other end of the scale with more disengaged because they're usually, you know, busy working and having their career, so they're not involved every day, but the result is still the same. That attachment, I think when it comes to talking about mental health, people really need to start talking about those first 3 years, even before birth, prenatal through three, because a whole lot of development occurs that some of which you can never fix. Like people talk about Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson may be bipolar. He may be a lot of things, but that man has reactive attachment disorder and you can't medicate that. That's something that occurred, you know, that rewired his brain. Trauma rewires your brain. We know that. Adverse childhood, ACEs, we know that. And so we start at the beginning from prenatal all the way through, you know, you can have the best parenting style ever, but if those needs and wants weren't met the first 3 years, you're dealing with attachment issues.
Yeah, and that's why, like, sometimes when I'm in conversations with certain people and they say certain things, I have to remove myself from the conversation because I feel myself going down the road where because I know they're wrong, and I'm trying to get them to understand, and my tone may come off a bit abrasive, but then, you know, go back to the old adage, never argue with food. And I'm saying this because I remember having a conversation with someone, and we were talking about prenatal trauma. And it was a story about a young lady. Well, the mother was raped while she was pregnant. So that's trauma on the mother and trauma on the baby. Mm-hmm. In the mother's stomach, and the person with no psychological experience, just from how they feel, was basically trying to say that would not have an effect on the person because they was inside the mother's stomach.
And that just goes to show they don't understand basic biology or chemistry because they would know that cortisol which is, you know, basically a form of adrenaline, gets pumped through, and that too much of that can absolutely impact a child's development. And they've proven that there's science research at the union for that. So that just goes to show, again, like you said, you don't argue with fools. You just, it's like, okay.
Right, right.
Well, that's so frustrating, too, because cortisol, and that's a great point you bring about cortisol, because cortisol is the stress hormone. That is the hormone that they're finding does a lot of the damage that is attributed to stress, is attributed to having too much cortisol in your system for too long. Matter of fact, the stress response is measured in how much cortisol you have in your system at this present moment. So, and we know that everything flowing through the mother is flowing through the baby. So, having an elevated level of cortisol in the system, especially during the early developmental stages of a baby being born, you got to be a damn idiot not to think that that's not going to have some sort of impact. But you go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, and I remember sitting in a case study where we were trying to prove to the court system that being in domestic violence situations when you're pregnant absolutely is could be deemed as child abuse. It is no better than using drugs while pregnant. One is just as bad as the other. It has the same sort of negative impact on a child's development.
The other good point you made, though, that I wanted to touch on, or reiterate, if you will, is the fact that, like, a lot of these mental health conditions, you can't medicate them. You know, like, your brain, the person's brain has been rewired. They need professional help. They need therapy and counseling, and a lot of it, to get those neurons rewired, new pathways molded. Mm-hmm. And that's if you can actually even do anything. Because depending on how late in the game it is, you know, like somebody with attachment issues at 80 years old that's been dealing with these issues all their lives, I'm not a professional. I'm not saying you can't do anything about it, but I'm saying you probably can't do nothing about it.
Right. So, yeah, the writing's on the wall.
But the older you get, because the older you get, the more crystallized your thinking gets, the harder it is for you to make changes to the way the brain is wired. So now you're dealing with a situation where you do have a generation of people who are mentally just messed up, because they are, and the only way that they can really help the next generation not be messed up is to acknowledge that they're messed up and try to take steps to see where it's affecting them and not pass that on, but also to communicate about it. And I go back to how many people are honestly willing to sit down and have a conversation with their kids and say, look, I'm fucked up, but I'm trying to do better by you. So this is this, and this. And obviously, you know, you don't sit down with your kid and say, I'm fucked up. Or maybe you do, depending on your relationship with your kid. I don't know. But, you know, being able to even admit to yourself that I'm fucked up is a step that a lot of people just haven't taken. And, again, I just wanted to harp on that point, that you can't treat a lot of this stuff. Like, there is no pill you can take that's going to magically rewire your brain and turn you into an emotionally stable, happy-go-lucky. Well, that's a whole other conversation about whether being overly positive is beneficial or not. But there's no pill you can take. So for those of you out there who are fucking up your kids and saying, well, they'll just go and get therapy later, and I can say that there are people saying that because I've literally heard people say that.
Yeah.
He in my house, he's gonna do what I say, and he can get therapy later.
Well, that you're not even trying. Then, as a parent, you're not even concerned about the child. You're just concerned about maintaining power and control at that point. Let's just be real.
And again, to go back to what I think you said, Joe, the goal of parenting is not to reign supreme over another human being. It's to cultivate a successful stable, compassionate, you know, empathetic soul. And I think people, they really, when I used to do family therapy, the very first thing I would ask people is, what is your number one goal as a parent? Like, what would you consider success as a parent? When your child turns 18, what does success look for you? And is it even 18? Some people think when they turn 18, they're done parenting. Other people think, till my last breath, I parent. And other people even have said, until my child's last breath, I'm up in heaven controlling stuff. So you have some pretty wild. I've heard quite a few things. It's like, really? Okay. But I think it's less what we even consider the goal of what parenting should be.
That makes me I just wonder, and I shake my head when I hear parents say that, because it's like I meet some people who become parents because they want to be in control, and I meet some people who become parents because they're looking for love and support and affection, or what they think they're getting it from a child who don't know what none of that means. They're just dependent. You know, that's right. Independent. Your child can't move. So, of course, of course your child going to need you. It can't move on its own. But it's like that codependency aspect, that aspect of reign, supreme power. Like you just said, I've heard that before. If I'm dead, I'm still over control of my child. And it's like, no, you're not. And as a man, when I'm hearing women say that, I get frustrated, especially when they're talking about, like that about young men, because I'm like, you can't tell me I'm wrong about being a black man in America as a black man in America. So just like I would never try to tell a black woman what's wrong and right about being a black woman in America, because I'm a black man. But I don't know it all, but I do know about being a man in America and some of the things that go into helping these children and helping a young man. And a parent being overbearing is not one thing that helps a black man develop in America. That child needs to have the room to be a male child and grow. And if that doesn't happen, you are stunting the child's growth, and that child will forever be dependent upon you. Going back to what I was talking about, the mama's boy. Like, you're 40 years old, and you're depending on your mother for everything. Your mother is your best friend, your emotional support, and all these things. I love my parents, but I don't want neither one of my parents to be my best friend at all. I'm good. Be my parent.
Right. So I do have a question for y'all. Do you find that men who have trouble being in healthy relationships with women, it's because of their relationship with their mom? Like, I hear all the time from other women, if he wasn't such a mama's boy, he might be something. Even from, what movie was it? Was it Color Purple? That there's a line in that, he might have been okay if he hadn't been such a mama's boy. Yeah, it's Color Purple. The grandfather says that to Danny Glover, and they're at the table. But anyway, and I'm just wondering if you guys, I know as women talk about that all the time, about she going to have to let go. He can't be her son and my husband. Like, the Bible says you leave your mom, you know, da 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 da. Do men talk about that at all? Because that's the enmeshment when it comes to the mother and the son.
Well, men drag other men through the mud for being mama's boys, depending on the circle you in. Don't be that man in the circle around men who are not mama's boys, because you're going to be treated like a little bitch, basically, in the circles that I've been in. So Pat might have a little different experience in the circles that I've been in. The men who are seen and act like mama's boys, they basically treated like a bitch, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me it's been dependent on what type of mama's boy he is. So if he's just somebody that's just always, like, got to be there for his mom, at his mom's beck and call, but in certain other circles, like in his relationship with his spouse or whatever, he's still able to assert himself, I've seen in those situations dudes get a pass for being a mama's boy. But if mama is the first thing in his life, then, yeah, I haven't been in any group of men that don't clown a man for that. Like,
because it's almost like a double sword, because for women we say, you know a good man by how he treats his mama. But then at the same time we say, oh, he a mama's boy. He got to get off her titty. He can't run my house because he's too busy, on her. So I was just curious to ask you what, because that's a measurement. I mean, it 100% it is. So.
Yeah, but I don't know too many men that treat their wife or their woman the way they treat their mama. Because I know a lot of dudes who treat their mama like the queen of the world, but treat the girls, and I'm not saying they friends, that's why I said I know them, but treat their women folks like, some old
time. Yeah, like trash.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
But those are also the men who have, that box that a lot of men have. And if you're a woman that's in this box, then with this dude, you good. But if you outside of that box, you on your own. And I do think that's where that concept comes in with that. But a man that's seen as a mother's as a mama's boy is seen as weak, and he don't get respect from nobody on either side but his mama.
Okay. And even she don't really respect him. She's just using him to get her needs met, really.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Because she's got her own fear of abandonment and, needing him because she's codependent. So I was just wondering.
Yeah, now that's a good question, though.
It was. The mama's boy thing is always an interesting conversation because, like you said, it's dual-edged. On the one hand, women say pay attention to how a man treat his mama. But on the other hand, if he treat his mama too much like a queen, like there's another issue there because you're the only queen in your house. So,
right.
It's interesting. But, I think men have the same... Women have the same dynamic. I just think it's expressed differently because daddy's girls aren't necessarily all that attractive either for men. But at the same time, every man want to raise a daddy's girl.
Yeah.
So
yeah, because a girl who's a daddy's girl, most dudes not messing with her because they don't want to deal with the father.
Right. Right. So, but I guess it's viewed a little bit different, I guess. Like the daddy's girl dynamic doesn't have the same connotation to it, I guess, context or whatever, as a mama's boy. Because now that I think about it, daddy's girls, outside of just dealing with the dad in a relationship with her, don't really have any negative context.
Right.
Mama's boy is like bad all the way around.
And I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, is that enmeshment doesn't really, it's not a father-daughter relationship. Is not, that he's more just more likely to spoil her. There's a difference between spoiling your child and being enmeshed with your child. So I think that therein lies the difference.
That's true.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Yeah, but I think the main thing you said in that is really understanding where you are and understanding the difference between the two. And let's just be real. Most people don't. Because in our community, mental health and everything, all the different aspects of it, it's better than it was, but it's still not a popular topic. It's still not things that people really want to dig in and deal with and bring up the past and get over these demons. So I know enmeshment is something that is probably at mental health for a lot of, especially black people, they don't even know it exists. They don't even know it exists.
Right.
So... Like I didn't even know it existed 2 weeks ago. I understood the concepts, but not that particular term. So, yeah, it's a lot of people are not really going to get it because they don't know it exists. Let's just be real. So.
I worked with a mother who every holiday, Halloween until February, she was in a deep, 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 deep depression. And it really all boiled down to the fight between her husband wanting to go, you know, to his family and spend holidays with them, and then her absolute need to spend all the holidays at her mom, at her, actually wasn't even her mom, at her grandmother's house, because the grandmother was the matriarch of the family, and everybody came back to the grandmother's house. They called her Aunt Titi. Everybody went to Aunt Titi's house, period, over the end. You did not miss it for any reason. Unless you were on your deathbed, you and your kid and your spouse went to Aunt Titi's. Whether you married outside, the far, it didn't matter. You had to be back there. And just and trying to get through all of that and help her see that, no, you can have your own. And they all wrapped it up with family tradition and guilt. Now you're depriving your kids of seeing their kids, cousins, and having the family tradition of having every single holiday at family titis. And it was like, okay, but do you see the flip side of that, of now you're depriving your children of having holidays and traditions with their father's side of the family?
Yeah.
There was no room. I mean, it was complete, this is what you do, and you had to do it because Aunt Titi took care of everybody's kids, and the least you could do is come back and be there for the holidays because she took care, you know, she babysat, she washed, she mended, she did everything. So that's what you're supposed to do as, and in the Black community, you know, we hold those traditions high.
Yeah. That's true. And, but it also another reason for the Black community to look at ourselves and reevaluate ourselves and really sit down and ask, are these things that we're doing, are they really helping us? I know it may make the individual feel good, feel powerful, feel accomplished, feel purpose, but is it really healthy? Is it really helping? Is it really allowing people to grow fully? And if those, you can't answer those questions with yeses, and you, there's a bunch of no's and I don't know's and no understanding, then we're not really moving forward in the healthy manner that we need to. And we're probably doing more damage than we are helping people. All right? And
yeah,
evaluation is definitely needed.
Yep.
Yeah. Miss Kristen, could you tell the people what your website is again?
Yes, it's homeschoolingfootprints.com. And again, I'm going to shout out PAX Incorporated for doing the website and doing an amazing job. So if you need a website, PAX Incorporated is who you need to reach out to. You will be very satisfied with the work that is done.
Yeah, it is. Also, could you give a brief description of your homeschooling and everything that you bring to the table within that realm, so people will have that better understanding of that?
Sure. I teach, well, because of COVID right now, we're 100% online, but I teach literacy using science and history, all things grammar, writing, reading comprehension, skills, strategy, using science, everything but physics. I'm not into physics. And we study and read everything through the perspective of well, really, truly, Black America, and as a woman, I try to make sure that everyone's also looking at it through the role of women as well. So we read the old classics and try to juxtapose that with good Black literature, and then we also teach critical thinking, because we learned early in that these kids, bless their hearts, are really missing basic skills as to how to think critically through things, and so we added that piece in as well.
Okay. All right, cool. Appreciate that. Pat, you got any parting shots? No, don't try to clean it up this week.
I was just gonna say in your motherfucking face, but I was gonna slow it down.
That's what
I was trying to find a creative way to slow it down.
Okay, as long as you say that, as long as you keep that same energy, I'm cool.
So you know I don't change my energy.
There it is. Hey, man, let's let's make sure we do better taking care of ourselves. How about that? That's my part, child. Let's do better.
Every week you do this. You try to have some old deep, profound part and shot, and you ain't deep or profound.
Okay, how about this? Don't be like Reese McGuire, the catcher for the Toronto Blue Jays, and get caught jacking off in the parking lot. Is that good?
Yeah, that's a good one. All right.
Don't beat off in public. That's my parting shot. Hey, I am Joseph Ward. Thank you for Miss Kristen. Thank you for coming through and kicking it with us. He's Patrick Irvin. This is the Freedom Train Podcast Series. We're the number one podcast in your face, so download this episode, like, comment, subscribe, download, share, all those things, so the next person you know can benefit from this information. Remember, this August is our Mental Health Awareness Month, and we're getting it in the only way we know how. So with that being said, two fingers in the air like a player, because we up out of here. Hey. Oh, wrong music. My fault.
Yes.
Let's get my music together. Here we go.
Yes, your fault.
Okay.